Welcome to episode 56 of the 3M Fear podcast. In 2009, a psychological horror film, The Haunting in Connecticut, was released. The film was a huge success, and as scary as it was, the real story is even scarier. This story is the story of the Snyderker family. The family were just like any other normal middle-class American family. In this family, there was Carmen, her husband Alan, and their four children, Philip, Bradley, Alan Jr., and Jennifer. Carmen's niece, Tammy, also lived with their family. Now, this family recently moved into their new house, which included 5 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, and plenty of space for their family. Little did they know that this one step to buy a new house was going to turn into their worst nightmare ever. They were going to be haunted by an entity that they could never get rid of. This is the story of the Snyderker family. Hello and welcome to the 3AM Fear podcast. I'm Nikita Ferrao, mystery and thriller author. On this podcast, I talk about real crimes and real people. Due to the graphic nature of some of this content, listener discretion is advised. You can find the episode show notes on my website 3amfear.com. Let's get started. In 1986, Carmen and her husband faced a difficult situation when their son was diagnosed with cancer. They decided that they wanted to move from New York City to Southington, Connecticut. It was a quiet town, a small space, but what was the best part was that it was close to the hospital where their son was about to receive his treatment. And conveniently, closer to the hospital, was this new house that they found. They could have continued living in their own house, but it was too much for them to travel, especially considering the travel expenses. And so they decided, why not buy a new house close to the hospital and start living there? As you can imagine, the Snyderker family was not well-to-do. The father, Alan, was a former stonemason and was suspected of having struggles with alcoholism. His wife, Carmen, was a waitress and she was currently in between jobs. The Snyderkers were desperately searching for a house to rent, and as soon as they found this house, they wanted to lock it in. Now their son was receiving treatment for his Hodgkin's lymphoma at the nearby hospital. The Hodgkin's lymphoma is a type of cancer that affects the body's lymphatic system. Soon after the movement, everything seemed normal, until Carmen made a disturbing discovery in the home's basement. It appeared to be divided into two rooms, and they found tools and embalming tables, leading them to a surprising realization. The house was a funeral home. After making the shocking discovery, the family went on to check all the paperwork, and that's when they realized they were right. There was a funeral home here before they decided to move in. Carmen ended up contacting Daryl Karen, the home's owner, and he said that the property was once the Hallahan Funeral Home and it was operating for decades. He would later go on to say that he did tell the family before they bought the house that it was a funeral home and the family had no problem with it. But Carmen would always say that she never knew this was a funeral home. Upon discovering their new home's history, the Snyderker family were concerned, but at the same time, they had gotten this house at such a good price and it was so close to the hospital that they decided that they would do the sacrifice for their son Philip and they would live in this house. And because the house was so big, it was also very comfortable for them to live with their children. Carmen's two sons, Philip and Bradley, would go on to claim the basement as their own bedroom. As the oldest Snydecker children, they wanted their own private space, and this was perfect for them. Although I would never understand why would someone happily live in the basement of a prior funeral home, a place where bodies used to be kept. But that's what I was wondering. Now, along with the mortuary equipment, the family also found a lot of tools over there. I don't know what they did with it, but Carmen would go on to say, quote, "There were a couple of photos in the home, but there were many toe tags and a head tag. There were other personal items of the deceased." End quote. As the family settled in, Carmen started experiencing strange occurrences. Items went missing, and the children claimed to see this unfamiliar figure in the house. Initially, they thought that maybe it was a bad dream, but the children would later go on to say that they could hear whispers in the night. Carmen also noticed unusual bird sounds, not your typical bird sound, but it was quite unusual and scary at the same time. Despite all the things that were happening, this would be the new normal for the Snydecker family. The eldest son, who was undergoing radiation treatment, began displaying drastic changes in his personality. He would become angry, withdrawn, and depressed. This was completely different to how his normal activity was. Initially, they thought that it was the treatment that was getting to him, and maybe he was just too tired, and with all the cancer treatment that was going on, he just needed a break. But as time went on, it became worse and worse. It almost seemed like he had some demonic influence on him. During the course of their stay, the children would often run to their father and tell that they could see this flickering light. And at one point, their father got so angry that he ended up removing all the light bulbs from the rooms. There was a dumb waiter in the house that was used to loading and delivering bodies down to the basement. And at night, these boys would hear these mysterious sounds coming from the dumb waiter, as if someone was there. At one point, the room seemed to go so cold, as if they were actually sitting or living inside a mortuary. And as soon as this icy coldness had come in, it would quickly disappear. In an interview with People, Carmen would go on to say, quote, "My son started seeing this young man with long black hair down all the way to his hips. He would talk to my son every day. Sometimes he would threaten him. Other times he would stand there and just say his name, which was enough to scare him." End quote. As the son coped with his emotion, he turned to writing as an outlet. However, the family discovered that his poetry contained some disturbing themes related to necrophilia, that is, having sex with the dead. This revelation added to the family's growing concern. They were afraid. This was not their son. I mean, no amount of treatment could make a person do like this. One night, as Philip was all alone, he was disturbed by mysterious voices. He investigated and was horrified to see walls filled with stacked dead bodies. Naturally, he screamed in terror. When the family rushed in to find out what happened, he pointed, but there was nothing. He was all alone. Carmen and Alan saw nothing unusual, and they couldn't understand what was happening to him. Was the treatment getting to him? As time passed, Philip's mental state would continue to deteriorate, plunging into darkness and depression. His anger would only increase. The family grappled with the unsettling events, struggling to understand whether they were related to medical treatment or there was something else happening in the house. As Philip continued to sleep in the basement, horrifying things would happen. There was one intense episode when he attacked his own cousin with the attempt to rape her. Now remember, the cousin was still sleeping in the same house. And late one night, he sneaked into her room in order to rape her. The family managed to rush in and help her just in time. Now, different reports say different things. Some reports say that there were two cousins in the house, while some say that there was one. But either ways, Philip tried to rape only one cousin. Philip would later be forced to spend 45 days in the hospital. Doctors would try to find out what was happening to him, and they even diagnosed him with schizophrenia after he told that he saw these entities. And they also noticed that the medicine that he was taking, there was no side effect of hallucination. So, what was he seeing? Now, the Snyderker family decided that it was best if Philip could go and live with their relatives. Because even after everything that he did, they didn't want to send him to the cops. I mean, he was sick. He was literally dying. As I said, Alan was mostly absent during this time. He was said to be an alcoholic and he was not that present. Now, Carmen had a completely different experience. One evening, while she was taking a shower, something strange happened. The shower curtain began to stick to her body, and while science could explain that this could be natural, Carmen said that it seemed mysterious. This was not normal. The curtain wrapped around her face and neck. Blinded by the shampoo, she cried out for help, and luckily, her niece Tammy heard and rescued her by unwrapping the curtain. Now, the bizarre accidents didn't stop there for Carmen. She started experiencing assaults from unseen force. These assaults would happen randomly, and it reached to the point that she was scared to tell her husband. Because remember, Alan was having a lot of problems around this time. Carmen would say that she would wake up in the middle of the night, sensing a negative and heavy energy around her. And although she couldn't see anything, she knew something was present. She would go on to describe cold hands under her pajamas, tugging at her bra. Now, some stories, as I said, told that Carmen had two nieces. So that would be Tammy, and this one was Kelly. Now, if we go by this report, Kelly was also said to have experienced some sort of a problem with this entity. Kelly would say that she could experience someone being there, cold hands touching her body, and at one point she even said that she was raped by this demonic entity. I'm not 100% sure on whether there was one niece or two nieces in the house. There are too many retellings of the story, so it's very difficult to know. Tammy was 100% with the family. It's Kelly that some reports say that she was there, while some say that there was no Kelly with them. But out of all of this, Alan, the husband, shared a similar encounter during one night's sleep. He felt hands on him, and he said that he was sexually assaulted by the demon. Despite these disturbing incidents, the family chose not to move out. Why? Again, it was close to the hospital, and that's what they needed. Their son was still sick. At one point, Tammy would also go on to say that she experienced the quilt from her bed levitating up to her ceiling. She said that she saw this shadowy figure and could hear these whispers. Clinging to her Catholic faith, she tried to use the rosary beads, but the unseen force would violently rip them away. The apparitions in the house would take physical forms, and this would turn into a tall woman with long black hair and a man with whitish colored hair in a pinstripe tuxedo. Meanwhile, Philip, who was undergoing his treatment, displayed a strange change in his personality. He began lashing out at the hospital staff, and terror escalated. One day, Carmen found mop water turned into blood, and there was this stench, disgusting stench of death. She could smell the scent of rotting flesh and decay, only for it to disappear moments later. The strong, sudden odors reminded her of sulfur exhaled or even flatulence. When she noticed that the mop water had turned into blood, she ended up calling her children. But when they came, the floor was completely normal. Carmen felt like she was going crazy. This all was impossible. That night, she would go on to have a very vivid encounter with the supernatural. She woke up in the middle of the night, surrounded by a dark feeling. But this time, she actually saw two ghosts. Carmen would end up taking action and she would call in paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. Edward Warren, also known as Ed, was a demonologist and Lorraine Warren was a medium. Lorraine had the ability to speak to the dead. The Warrens, along with a few investigators, moved into the Snydecker house for several weeks. They wanted to understand and also validate the family's claims. They hoped to experience everything that the family had said. They wanted to help the family, but in order to do that, they had to see the demons for themselves. While staying in the house, the paranormal investigators would go on to say that they had indeed experienced everything that the family said. As part of the investigation, the team delved into the house's history and they uncovered several secrets. The main secret was that one of the undertakers at the former funeral home had been convicted of necrophilia. This revelation intensified the belief that there was some sort of a demonic force in the house, and that's why maybe the son was acting so weird. The Warren said that it was necessary to perform a full-scale exorcism on the property. Following the exorcism, the Warren said that the house would be cleared. In fact, the Warrens would go on to conduct a full-scale exorcism, everything that you could imagine. And at the end of the exorcism, they would say that the house was cleared, the demons were gone, and no one would trouble the family again. Now, despite this supposed clearance, many people who lived in the house, both before and after the Snydecker family came in, they would say that they never experienced any entities. Now, it would be normal if someone who lived in the house after the Snydecker family said that they didn't experience any demons, because then the Snydecker family would say that they got rid of them through the exorcism. But no one who lived before also experienced any kind of demons. In fact, it was only the Snydeckers and the Warrens who claimed that they experienced something. As the Snydecker family would go on to talk about their experiences, there would be some inconsistencies in their story. Like for instance, as I said in the beginning, the family said they didn't know it was a funeral home until after they moved in, and that's when they saw all these funeral items. But the person who sold them the property would go on to say that he did tell them it was all there in the contract, the family knew what they were getting into, and they still wanted to get in, maybe because of a good deal. As the family story unfolded, the Warrens and the family would go on to hire a horror novel writer, Ray Garten, to write a book about their experiences. The author, later on in an interview, would go on to say that he kind of went into this dark place and he noticed that the stories that the family was telling him and what he experienced were not lining up. Something just wasn't right. He had difficulties crafting a proper narrative, as different parties involved, that is the Warrens and the family, would go on to say two different stories, and they were kind of contradicting each other. When he approached Ed Warren, Ed Warren told him, "Don't worry, make it seem scary." That was his words, "make the story scary." In an interview, he would go on to say, quote, "I found that the accounts of the individual Snydeckers didn't quite mesh. They couldn't keep their story straight. I went to Ed with this problem." "Oh, they're crazy," he said. "You've got some of the story. Just use what works and make the rest up. Just make it up and make it scary. End quote. I think this statement would be enough to tell you how much of the whole story was true. And also this shines light to how much of the Ed and Lorraine Warren cases are actually true. They would go on to make movies and profits out of the Conjuring movie, Annabelle. So how much of that was actually true? Now though the Snydeckers stood by their story, they said that whatever they said was the truth, there was no backing up. The only person other than the family and the Warrens was the writer. And the writer himself said that the Warrens told him to make it scary. Now around this time, there was also the case of the Lutz family that inspired the movie The Amityville Horror. And as we know, the Warrens were also involved in that case. So it is possible that maybe this was all a lie, or maybe it was somewhat the truth, but it was blown way out of proportion. The author would then go on to say that he had exaggerated a lot in a story, and that story would later go on to be the movie. Now, despite all the skepticisms around the authenticity of the story, the haunted house became a popular attraction for photographers, curious individuals, and paranormal enthusiasts. As of 2015, the then current owners reported no paranormal activity in the house. Over the years, as the children grew up, Carmen and Alan would go on to get divorced and go their separate ways. Carmen would later become a spiritual advisor and express plans to write another book about all her experiences. The story has ended up being in multiple books, a Discovery Channel special, a Hollywood film, and the talk of the town. So many true crime people, so many horror podcasts, horror YouTube channels have taken up this case, but no one could find out how much of it was the truth. Now there are a lot of opinions, and this is something that I heard in one of the true crime episodes, and I'll link it in the description. Now according to this, it is said that maybe, just maybe, the son who was suffering from cancer had a problem. And of course, we know that he tried to rape one of his cousins. So maybe, this is just a theory, but maybe he actually did try to rape the cousin. And in order to protect him, the family decided to make this elaborate plan of, you know, saying that the house was haunted and there were spirits. And that's why the family also said that they too experienced all these things. Carmen would go on to say that she was abused. Alan would go on to say that he faced some sort of an assault. So it is possible that maybe in order to protect their son Philip, they decided that they would prove that the house was haunted. But I have no idea what the Warrens had to do with this. Were they in on this whole thing for a good story? Or did they think that they experienced something? But once again, as I said, this is just a theory. There is no way to prove or back this up. It is said that the son ended up getting cured, he got better, and he started to live a good life. But at the age of 33 or 34, he ended up passing away. It is said that his cancer came back and eventually he died. To this day, the entire case is as unsolved as it was that day. Now, I would like to ask you this question. What do you think? Do you think the Snydecker family was actually haunted? Or do you think that this was an elaborate hoax and that they did it for fame or a cover-up? A big thank you to all my fellow listeners who have been listening to all my episodes. Thank you so much. Your listens, your support means a lot. If you love my podcast, if you love the stories that I put out, then please do follow me on whichever podcasting platform you are listening from. And please do leave a rating. It will really help me a lot. You can listen to me on other platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcasting platform. If you are in India, you can always listen to my podcast on Gaana or JioSaavn. If you love to listen to strange and mysterious stories, then follow me on Instagram and YouTube, where I put out reels on such stories. These are completely different from the ones that I put out on my podcast, so do follow me on them.
If you love travel, you can follow me on my travel channels. I'll link them also in the description. Until then, stay kind and stay safe out there.